Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Unfold Radio. Welcome to Art and Soul Radio. I'm your host, Leslie Riley of Artist Success, and it's Monday, March 12, 2012, and I'm coming to you from our nation's capital, Washington, D.C. My guest today is artist, art consultant, and community arts organizer, Judith Hartsong. A big hello to all Art and Soul Radio fans, and an even bigger welcome to those joining us for the first time. Thank you so much for listening and spreading the word about the in-depth artist interviews here at Art and Soul Radio, where you can find artist answers to the eternal question, where does art come from? Art and Soul Radio is brought to you by Art and Soul, the National Art Retreat Extraordinaire. For more information on workshops and locations, please visit their website at artandsoulretreat.com. And here's a reminder, you can always listen to any show on the Blog Talk Radio Show website. But even better, subscribe to the iTunes Art and Soul Radio podcasts and download them to your iPod, iPhone, or iPad. It's inspiration on the go. So now on with the show. Judith Hartsong has been working as a professional artist for 30 years after a public school education which was completely art-centric. As a child, she was always out in nature, in the woods and along the creek beds of northern Pennsylvania, where she developed a sense of awe and respect for the natural world early on, and that devotion has never wavered. Special allowances were made in the course of her education to provide art instruction and the time she needed to focus on it. She studied privately with some tremendous artists and worked with every sort of material she could get her hands on to build her knowledge of mediums. Today, Judith is currently a professional artist and prolific painter with an impressive resume and a mover and shaker in creating and sustaining the art community in the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. She's painted a mural at the National Zoo, licensed artwork for collector plates, created a limited edition series of prints sold on Princess Cruise Lines, served on the board of a local art center, and most recently also works as a corporate art consultant. And if that's not enough, Judith hosts an artist salon each month at her fabulous new studio. We'll find out about that and so much more. So let's get rolling. So hello, Judith, and welcome to Art and Soul Radio.
Hey, Leslie, how are you?
I am having a great day, and I'm so excited to be talking to you.
So, well, it couldn't be better even on a rainy day.
Yeah, well, that's true, too. So I'm going to dive right into the questions because I know we've got a lot to talk about, and I want to try to fit it all in the hour that we have, okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. So, you moved to Maryland in 2002, and in 10 years, you've become a well-known and driving force in the local art community, like 10 times more than I ever have, which is non-existent, actually. But I'd like to ask you what advice you have for finding and creating community for artists who moved to a new town, or even someone like me who's been living all their life in an area and never reached out. But I think it's particularly intimidating because a lot of people feel scared to enter a group of new people, or they feel that they might be unqualified to associate with those who they think are real artists when they're not real artists. So what's your take on that?
Oh, I think that's a great question. And I think, first off, I think that any artist who is living in an area, whether they've been there forever, if they've been there for 6 months or 2 years, has to remember that every other artist living in that community is also looking to connect and reach out and meet new people that might be inspiring for them or might play a part in some sort of project that they would like to do. And honestly, for the most part, in the arts community, it's really not a rarefied atmosphere where some people are playing one game and some people are playing another. For the most part, artists work hard every day, you know, no matter what their discipline is, no matter what it is their inspiration is. And many artists that you or I might consider very well established and well known in our community can have the same questions and insecurities about their work, their most personal work, that you and I feel and that other artists in our community feel every day. So it's important to not be afraid of trying to make connections. And my motto is always kind of, you know, all they can do is say no. I have a tendency to reach out to all kinds of people. I tend to be a community builder, which I think you've noticed already. And I like to just bring people together because you never know in a community whose expertise you might benefit from and who may end up being just a really tremendously good friend who will share your passion for art and will give you the little pushes and shoves that we all need along the way.
Definitely, yeah. So how do you do that? How do you know? There's usually, well, the bigger the city, of course, the more art groups there are and the more opportunities for galleries and classes and art centers. But let's say you lived in a small town in the middle of Iowa. How would you find your fellow artists? Do you have any ideas on that?
Absolutely. First, look in your local classifieds or check with a local community college and watch the newspaper because usually even local newspapers will have an arts and entertainment section. And you might see some ads for a local watercolor society or a local ceramic group that has open wheel on Sundays or whatever the case might be. Photographers might find a group that does field trips together to photograph botanic gardens and local landmarks, that sort of thing. And it's good to just start to keep your ear to the ground. And when you meet an artist, absolutely have your business cards with you. Say I'm new to the area, I'm trying to figure things out. I'd love to know if you have any input or guidance for me as to how I can start to get to know people here.
Okay. So fine art, I'm going to bring up this topic between fine art and craft because a lot of the women that I teach and work with and create with are not what they would call themselves fine artists. So do you think, I mean, maybe it's just old stereotypes, but do you think fine artists and craft artists and mixed media artists can all hang out together and find happiness together?
Oh, absolutely. In my life, that's very much the way things work. I know jewelers, I know beaders, I know quilters. I know a large group of photographers who have become good friends of mine, and I think cross-discipline is a very good way to meet people and be inspired because, you know, I paint all day long every day. I don't know, you know, if anybody would be necessarily who is another painter would be inspired by my nitty-gritty day-to-day existence, but if there's someone who maybe doesn't do exactly what I do, say a mixed media artist, and they come into my studio, they're seeing a process that's totally different than theirs that really oftentimes leads to tremendous breakthroughs creatively. So I think, and interestingly, the fine art and fine craft discussion has been going on for a while now, and with some of the, like the ACC Baltimore show and the Rosen show in Philadelphia, many of these disciplines are coming much closer to rubbing shoulders because there is so much artistry and so many of the fine crafts that are practiced that I think that line is really starting to blur.
Yeah, that's good to hear because that's sort of been my goal all along, is to get us all to play in the same sandbox instead of labeling ourselves as one thing, because as we've just talked about, you know, that cross-pollination and being exposed to how others create and what they use to create and express themselves, is there's nothing but good involved in all of that.
Absolutely. I could not agree more.
Yeah, so this is good. I'm glad to hear that that's your take on it, too, because since you are so involved, and I'm sitting on the sidelines still, it's nice to hear it from somebody who's out there circulating amongst artists and corporate art and all that fancy stuff that we'll talk about later. So I want to talk about your studio, though. The studio you're sitting in right now. What was that?
The studio that I am sitting in on this rainy day.
Yeah. So it's your dream studio space. And after you began, like so many of us do, and I love the words you put it in, you began in a space that needed to morph back into a dining room at the end of each day. So tell us about your studio journey from the dining room to this little slice of heaven in Glen Echo, Maryland, which just happens to overlook the C&O Canal, the Potomac River, and best of all, as far as I'm concerned, is right next door to a former amusement park, which is now a national arts park.
Oh, it's a wonderful place. And as you said, I've been painting for 30 years. Started out, in fourth grade. You know, I've been a professional artist for 30 years, but I started out in fourth grade really seriously, drawing and sketching, and had art teachers who absolutely fed my curiosity. And so as soon as I moved out and started out on my own and married and began to raise children, I painted wherever and whenever there was time. So I would paint in a dining room. I have painted in a living room area. Those areas all need to go, you know, back to their normal use. I would paint at 2 o'clock in the morning. And it was really challenging when I was raising kids because it's, you know, you have your priorities, and raising my kids was my priority, and the art had to kind of fit into the cracks. And so it worked at that time for me to have a cabinet in my dining room that should be a china cabinet. And mm-hmm. in the hidden compartments, in the tucked away drawers and behind the doors were all of my supplies. My brushes were there. My paints were there. And little by little, they kind of started finding their way out into visible space and moved, raised my kids, moved again, you know, raised my kids some more. And everywhere I went, it was just kind of an off to the side space wherever I could find space. And then, you know, my kids have grown up. I moved here about 10 years ago. Started completely over again in this new area. And I decided for the first time I was painting at home. I had a dedicated extra bedroom that was mine. The light was not optimal. I really didn't feel comfortable bringing in people into my home. And as you know, you have clients that need to come in. You have people who want to come in and be taught and all of that sort of thing. And at that time, I decided to take a studio at Viz Arts in Rockville and was really happy there. I was sharing a space for a while, eventually took over the studio on my own. The light was incredible. I could bring anybody in to teach. And it was just, it was really an eye-opening experience, because being in the public eye and working with people watching you paint, I had done that over the course of years as I muraled, but never at an easel. And it was just really inspiring, and the interaction with other artists was wonderful. And I think right at that point, I decided that if it was in my power, I would keep my studio space outside my home. VizArts was wonderful. I ended up on the board of directors there and helped to manage the resident artist program. We had a blast. There was a lot of cross-pollination going on. And at some point there, a very long-time director left the Art Center, and so much changed at that point. And, you know, there with that sort of regime change, there ends up being a lot of change in the organization. And long story short, I finally decided my business was growing, amazing things were happening, and I really felt as though our access to visitors was kind of going downhill. We didn't have as many people coming in. There wasn't as much programming happening. And at that point, I had an option to take this studio in Glen Echo, and I absolutely embraced it, terrified. And as it turned out, I mean, now I've been here for 11 months, and I just could not be happier. I'm in a basement flat in a three-story building. It's all businesses in this building. And I have 3 to 4 times the amount of space that I used to have in my little fishbowl studio at VizArts. I've got a great flagstone patio. I've got French doors that lead out onto it. When the leaves are off the trees, you can see the Potomac down the hill. I've got studio and gallery space, which is just tremendous.
Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous, yeah. And I, when I was researching the interview, I stumbled across your Flickr site with all the photos of your studio. So I just wanted to tell everybody so that they could be, maybe they can do that now if they're sitting at their computer. But it's one thing to hear about it. It's another thing to see. So flickr.com/photos. /Judith Hartsong, all one word. That's your name, Judith Hartsong. Beautiful name. Okay. So, moving on. You were part of a panel discussion on alternative paths for artist success at the Corcoran School of Art and Design in D.C. here, which was hosted by the Washington Project for the Arts. So I wanted to pick your brain and have you share with us a few of the alternative ways to create success as an artist.
Oh, and gosh, in this day and age, there are more possibilities than we ever could have imagined 20 years ago when we were hand-mailing out our invitations and, you know, doing so much PR in different ways. And I really found that discussion fascinating because they brought together a bunch of people for the panel from different disciplines, different viewpoints, different stages in their lives, and it was really an inspiring sort of discussion. And interestingly, Lisa Gold of the Washington Project for the Arts said that she had thought of me right away because I do have kind of a different way of doing things. I'm very involved in my own PR, and I'm always kind of looking for the next opportunity to create something wonderful in the community, and I think that's why she thought of me. But there are so many different ways. We used to think of kind of, you know, the white box model. You had to be in a gallery. You had to get good representation. And anymore, with the change in economic circumstances and galleries, unfortunately, going out of business right and left, the gallery model is not right now necessarily sustainable, and I don't know if that's going to change in the future or not, but mm-hmm. with the current economic situation, people are having to think outside the box, you know? And so from my perspective, I I have this kind of go-get-em sort of attitude, and I look at every new opportunity and every new idea and possibility as something that could be a good thing. So whether it's licensing your work, which creates, you know, a regular income that can, you know, support and sustain the work that you're trying to do, muraling in public spaces, which, you know, you always have to remember you're going to sign that mural with your name and someone is going to find you from that mural. And I did a mural at the National Zoo in 2003, which did just that. After I had moved here, it really helped me to kind of get on the map in D.C. where nobody knew who I was and nobody knew that I had had a 20-year professional career in Florida. And, you know, coming from Orlando to here, D.C. is a much bigger fishbowl, and I'm a much smaller fish. So it was a matter of kind of getting my name out there, looking for opportunities, starting to teach. Some people like to create sort of alternate ed programs that they can then head up. Here in D.C., there are a number of people who are putting together programs for at-risk youth in the city, and these kids are getting exposure to art. There's notoriety that's happening because of these programs, and the individual artists are helping to put themselves on the map in that way. And then as we were talking about network and building your circle of opportunities and enhancing that circle, by getting out there, joining a local arts group and participating and maybe starting to manage events, all of these different things can end up kind of pushing you forward, propelling you forward, and getting your name out there. And that's exactly what the old gallery model was supposed to do. So there are all kinds of ways, if you're curious and inventive and willing to kind of take some risks, whether it's showing in alternative venues, putting your work in shops that people might not necessarily think of, or even in the pop-up galleries that are becoming so popular now.
Yeah. Well, what role does having an online or web presence play in this too? Because that's definitely changed, and maybe that has something to do besides economics with the decline in galleries, because now everyone has equal opportunity to show their art. So what do you think the role of an online presence does?
Oh, absolutely. And interestingly, with Etsy and all of the other Redbubble and, gosh, I'm not going to be able to think of all of the different venues. And then there are a lot of venues for fine artists as well to show their paintings and mixed media. An online presence is a necessity now, but it also has helped to change the gallery model because people don't have to count on a gallery to get their work out there anymore. And I think in a way it kind of democratizes the process because, you know, there can be someone who has a mediocre talent, who lives in a large city, who happens upon representation, and their work may not be any better than someone who is living in a smaller community or just has not had that lucky break, but the person in the smaller community or the person who has just not found that lucky break yet can put themselves online and can do a number of things to promote themselves through their own PR with their own website, their daily artist blog, an interview site where they interview other artists and put people together in connections that way. Interestingly, there is a group of women up in Yellow Springs, Ohio, and they call themselves the Jaffa Girls, I think. And they actually are doing guerrilla art all over Yellow Springs, Ohio, and they have garnered national acclaim from all of these things that they're doing. So they're yarn bombing signposts and trees, and they put out...
What is yarn bombing? What is that?
Yarn bombing is when you knit a piece of knitting, and this is my uneducated viewpoint, and you create this knitted piece, and then you go out and you stitch it around a signpost or stitch it around a tree or stitch it onto a park bench, and they do all of these crazy, wonderful things, and there have been articles written about them. A good friend of mine, Corrine, is in this group. They have a public restroom in downtown Yellow Springs where they have decided to hang art, and articles have been written about them. And so, you know, 20 years ago, would this have been heard about all around the country and possibly all around the world? And the answer is no. So we're living in this wonderful time where you can do these crazy, inspired, wonderful things, and people can actually find out about you.
Yeah. And I think 20 years ago, people would have thought that they were just a bunch of women who'd lost their minds, probably, but with...
Exactly, and I'm dying to have them come down and yarn bomb my tree out front of the studio.
Oh, boy, that would be cool. Yeah, I know quilters have done that, too. I've seen a gas station covered in quilts, and there's a Dream Rocket project. So, yeah, that's a wonderful idea, though, to gather a group of friends together and create some sort of... you know, just outside the box, get people to notice and take note of what you're doing and just have fun with your art, too. I don't think so many people are so concerned with sales that they lose the joy of the making. And then if the joy is not in the making, their work suffers. And then, of course, their sales will probably suffer, too. So...
Exactly. You have to love what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And that shows in your work, definitely. The passion comes across in everything you do. And you do so many different types of work, too, because I've seen your assemblages, and I know you do mail art, and, of course, there's the painting. So mail art is sort of like it's not 180 degrees from painting, but it's certainly different, and it's something that's very accessible for everyone, whether they consider themselves an artist or not. So I want to know when and why and how you got started doing mail art.
Oh, interestingly, and you know, it's not that big a leap because I paint in the studio every day, but I also do mixed media boxes, and when you consider taking what I do in a mixed media shadow box and translating that to a postcard, it's really not that big a leap. And I have, for probably the last 20 years or so, when I mail good friends of mine and send them cards and notes and all of that sort of thing, I have a tendency to throw funny things in there or create something on the card that ends up being a mixed media assemblage. And over the course of years, that's just kind of been something I did, and I never really thought of the fact that it could be classified as mail art. It was just kind of the way creativity kind of bubbles over into your everyday life. And then in the last year, I joined a group called the International Union of Mail Artists, International Union of Mail Artists, and it's IUOMA. Does that make sense? I'm not looking at it written down. And they have, you know, a web presence. It brings together artists from all over the world, from kind of different disciplines. Some are, you know, every day in the studio working artists, and some are what we might call crafters. Some are writers that kind of put their work onto a postcard format. And I came together with this group of people, and I've met dozens of really wonderful, amazing people, and there's always something interesting in the mailbox, and I've always got stuff going out. My post office knows me very well here in Glen Echo, And it's just a way to kind of, for me, to create something that doesn't have to stand the test of time. It's not going to take me, 8 weeks to 3 months to complete. And yet it's something wonderful that goes out in the mail, and it inspires everybody that gets to touch it on the way to its intended destination. And as you said, it's something that anybody can do. You can cut up magazines. You can make your own paper. You can use handmade papers that you would buy at a craft store and combine them with, you know, interesting things that you find. You can stamp and paint and do all sorts of things. And that's actually something that I also offer a workshop in. But it's something that you really don't need a workshop in to get started. You just kind of start mm-hmm. collecting things and start creating.
Yeah. No, it's really, to me, it's like a relaxing downtime sort of activity. But the fun of it is that you are participating with other people all over the world. Plus, you, like you said, you get fun things in your mailbox every day, which is huge to me.
It's much more rare. Yeah.
It's like a little kid waiting for the mail every day. So I love that feeling. And I want to go back to something, too, about self-promotion and, you know, marketing your art, marketing yourself. So many artists are, I don't know if this is the right term, but sensitive people. You know, it's hard to have people look at your work and say no, or, you know, like not now or something like that. So you appear to me to have a rather thick skin, but how do you go out and market yourself and your art if you just, you know, if the thought just petrifies you?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if that ever gets easy for anyone because, you know, if we're doing what we're supposed to be doing in the studio, our work is tremendously personal to us and tremendously individual and unique to our own frame of reference and experience. And when you put the work out there, I remember when I first started doing art shows, now that would have been, gosh, about 22, 25 years ago, in Central Florida, you deal with all kinds of people, and you deal with people who appreciate art, and you deal with people who may or may not have tact, and may or may not like what you're doing. And, you know, there is never going to be an artist that everyone loves. No matter what artist you name from history, they will have their, you know, their defenders and supporters and their detractors. Mm-hmm. And I think it is important to, if you can't grow a thick skin, just say, you know what, if I love what I'm doing, that's got to be the number one. And if I can make other people love what I'm doing, I've succeeded.
Yeah. And I think, too, it's important nowadays with all the blogs and, you know, the more, I hate that word transparency, but that's what everybody uses now. But just getting to know the person behind the art. It used to be, and maybe it still is, but maybe a lot of people still think that the art speaks for itself. But I think now more than ever, people want to know the creator. So what are your thoughts on
that? Oh, and the backstory, yes.
Yeah. Do you think it's really important?
I think the person's history has so much to do with how they ended up where they are and mm-hmm. and what they're creating. That I know I personally, if I'm going to buy artwork from an artist, I definitely want to know something about them. And artists are kind of two minds, I think. And I don't know if it's equally divided camps or not. But some artists think they don't have to say anything about themselves or anything about their work. And whatever you see in the work itself is all they're going to give you. Mm-hmm. I kind of have a different philosophy. I keep a daily artist blog where I talk about my process. I talk about trips that I take. I will take photo field trips and take lots of pictures, and I show a range of the pictures that I've taken. And I think, you know, if we had had this ability with some of the great artists from our history, just imagine, you know, Frida or Georgia or Mary Cassatt or Chagall, any of those people, if we had had access to more of their words and their thoughts and what was going into their work, just think how much more we could appreciate what it is that they did.
Definitely. Yeah, to me it's only half done if I don't know the backstory or at least know the artist's reason for this creating. That's always been my key question, more so than the artwork. I want to know why they create, and why they're driven to, or why they chose that type of subject matter or something. So that's the most important thing to me, but I always wondered if it's just because I'm an artist too. Because what would a non-artist, you know, would they care to know that much? But I think yes, sometimes.
Oh, I think so too. And I used to have, when I lived in Central Florida, the last apartment that I lived in had a lot of space. I was able to bring people in, and I had collectors all the time that wanted to come over and visit, and sometimes I would dinner, and you know, they would hang out and they would get to see a little bit more of what went on behind the scenes, and I think they all appreciated that. Yeah. And I also invited to some really great parties as an artist. It's like, oh, that's an artist friend, she's coming to the party. But I think now in this space that I'm in, so many people come by and visit, and we have lunch here, and we talk, and they get to kind of poke around in the corners, and I think they really appreciate being able to see what the whole life is about instead of what I put on a canvas. So I think you're right. I think people do care.
Yeah, good. Well, then that leads me up to the next question. And I know you're currently working on a series of animal paintings. So tell us the story behind those.
This is my ABC series of animals, and there will be at least 26 paintings. And it's kind of interesting the way it came about, because it wasn't a huge intention on my part, but over the course of the last 30 years working as a professional artist, I have painted so many animals into murals in public spaces and into paintings that I was working on. And the one day I was thinking about it, and I said, you know, there is almost one animal for every letter of the alphabet that I've painted. And then I really thought about that and started to kind of tick off in my mind what animals were in the mural at the National Zoo and in other murals that I've done in public spaces. And that's where kind of the germ of the idea began. And I realize as I'm approaching the age of 50, are we women allowed to talk about our age?
Of course.
As I'm approaching 50, I used to think of things that I wanted to paint kind of in terms of someday I'll paint that. You know, someday I'll get to that project. Someday I'm going to approach that person. Someday I'm going to take that off the back burner and out of my sketchbook and actually do something with it. And as I approach 50 and you know, I've got some arthritis in my hands, and age is showing itself in all those wonderful, strange ways that it does. I started kind of coming to the realization that, you know, as I live my life, today is the one day you've got. You know, I woke up this morning. Today is the one day I've got. I'm here right this minute. I think I need to start kind of getting on with the things that I've been meaning to do. And so I had this idea, and I, you know, 26 paintings is rather ambitious, and, you know, and I don't finish a painting in a week. So, you know, it is a time commitment. And I thought, you know, there's like no time like the present, and I might as well go ahead and get started. And I fortunately reached a place in my career that when I want to work on something, I can work on it. I'm not always kind of worrying about landing commissions and painting murals for hire and all that sort of thing. And I do a few commissions a year, and the rest of the year is mine. And so I got started on this series, and I really am looking forward to creating some sort of ABC book that may be for kids, but it might also be for adults, with all of these animals in it, and doing something really wonderful with the group of paintings. So what started off as kind of this offbeat idea has kind of turned into a project for at least a year. So
how many have you done so far?
Well, I have done, let me see, I have the peacock, I have a bear, a wonderful bear that just came off the easel. I have a chameleon. I have a tiger. I have a little turtle. And then I have a couple of paintings that aren't going to be included in this series, but I may repaint them in one way or another for the series. And I've got a list that sits on my studio table of the alphabet animals that I'm thinking about. And yes, there is an animal for every letter of the alphabet. And little by little, I'm kind of narrowing it down. And so right now I'm working on a small commission of a red lorid parrot. And as soon as that is off the easel, I've got a great big wide canvas that will be going up, and it will be a snowy owl. So a snowy owl is the next animal to be painted.
That sounds like perfect time of year for that, definitely.
If we get, I think, any so too.
Yeah. Had a touch of snow. Was that yesterday? I don't remember now. Seems
it's
so
snow, yes.
Far off. So what's the animal for the letter Q?
I would have to check my list, and it's not right here handy where I can get to it. And some of them, I've only got ideas so far, and I haven't narrowed them down to exactly what I'll do.
Okay. So let's say you have your next one planned. Where do you go for source material? Because I know that some of these animals are rather hard to either find or to keep still. So how do you come up with your drawings?
And hard to photograph, and that's an entirely different conversation. That could be a conversation all on its own, but working artists are very aware of copyright issues, and, you know, if you open up a National Geographic and paint a tiger that you see there, you do it at your own peril, and I can tell you, having juried a lot of shows, that the jurors are very aware of, you know, magazines and publications, and they see images everywhere, and the second they recognize something as coming from a source that is other than out of your camera or out of your imagination, then you will not get in a show. So it's a very serious thing. I try to take almost all of my own reference photos. But in the case of a snowy owl flying with their wings extended, I don't have photographs. I don't have access, and I don't have photographs. And so the way that I work around that and protect myself as far as copyright goes is that I work from numerous reference images, and I don't use any one image as my reference. I use kind of an amalgamation of a lot of references. And that way, the resulting painting coming from my references and my imagination will never be anything that somebody can say, oh, my gosh, I've seen that photograph.
Okay, that's good. Because, yeah, I was wondering about that because, you know, I've seen the tiger on your easel, and I'm thinking, well, maybe it sat still long enough for you to take that photograph at the zoo, but then maybe again, maybe it didn't. So I was wondering where you got your reference material.
And it's something that as artists, we have to be really careful and responsible because there are other artists who happen to be photographers who make their living from their images as well, and my finished tiger painting belongs to me the way their photograph of a tiger belongs to them.
Right. Okay. So I saw that tiger painting at the Artist Salon event that you had last month, and I want to tell everybody the backstory about how we came to know each other, because I think it's one of those fate kind of things. But one of your friends was listening to one of my Art and Soul radio shows, and she wrote to me and said, I think you would like to interview my friend Judith Hartsong. So, of course, I went and looked at your site, and I saw that you live, oh, no, you don't live, but you have your studio right down the hill from me, about a mile or less. And I wrote back and I said, not only do I want to interview her, but I want to meet her. So I'd like to drop by her studio. And about a week later, I did. And we had a wonderful time, and we could have talked all day and all week, probably. And you invited me to your artist salon that was the following week, and actually next week or 2 weeks from now, I will be speaking at your artist salon. So I just love how all of that kind of came together just from me sitting here talking to other artists on the radio. So tell me about the artist salon. How did that come about? What was your vision when you created it? And how did you start it? And how would you recommend somebody go about starting their own if they wanted to do the same?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it is all about kind of serendipitous moments. For the last 3 or possibly 4 years, I have been looking for the opportunity. I've heard a lot about salons, how wonderful they can be for the artists and professionals that are participating. And I thought, you know, I'm a community builder. This is exactly what I need to be doing. But, you know, we're busy and we're overcommitted, and there's always kind of more on my plate than I can handle at a time anyway. I have this tendency to kind of triage the things that I have to do so that I'm able to do the things that I want to do. And so this was kind of on the back burner, and I didn't really know if it was ever going to go anywhere. And not all that long ago, months back, I had the idea again, and it dovetailed well with some other work that I'm doing with an artist friend of mine, and we're kind of starting to work on forming a business together that will kind of help to educate artists on the business of art. And I thought, you know, now is the time with that business venture beginning to kind of pull that out of the back door and see what I can do with it. And as things happen, I happened to see this article online about an artist named Susie Gablick, and she's from Blacksburg, Virginia. And Susie was wonderful in this article and talked about her salon. They held it in her house, I guess, every month. I don't remember now. She had a wonderful core group of artists that participated. And, you know, as we were saying earlier, all people can do is say no. So I located her email address. I sent her an email, and Susie very graciously responded, kind of wondering, you know, possibly why I had popped out of the woodwork. And she kind of asked me what it was that I wanted to know, and I said, you know, your salon sounds tremendous. It's something that I've wanted to do for years, and you have already done the hard part. You've already created it and, you know, found any major stumbling blocks that there could be, and realized that something you were doing was incredibly successful and totally worked. And I wondered if I could just pick her brain. And she very kindly, we wrote back and forth, had this great conversation. She kind of gave me the basic ground rules for what would need to happen in a salon, in forming a core group and the idea of putting a mix of people together, because if there's just a core group of painters, all they're going to do is talk painting all day, and that's not going to work, and it's not going to be sustainable. And so we talked all this through, and she wished me good luck, and I decided to put this group together. I put out feelers with kind of a mix of people who populate my life, who are good people. They have some community values and inspiration as far as wanting to bring people together and do good things for other people, and that's always a good place to start. And brought them together, and now we've been running for months, and I put the e-vite out 2 or 3 weeks before each salon, and we quickly fill up to capacity, and it's just going really well. And everybody, I look around that circle when we gather together, and everybody's so glad to be there, and I'm so glad to have them in my gallery, and we talk, and we laugh, and we share, and we have speakers. As you said, you're going to be our speaker this next month. Lisa Gold of the Washington Project for the Arts is on tap. She's going to be coming. Isabel Manalo from the Studio Visit, which is a DC arts blog, is going to be coming. And so we've got these great people who are willing to share of themselves and their time and their energy. And all of these varied people can get together and learn something and share something, and it just has turned out to be just this incredible thing. And I'm hoping Susie is somewhere smiling about this now, because she was definitely the impetus for getting it together when I saw that article. And so we've got artists, photographers, arts professionals from the Metro DC area, and little by little we're kind of expanding the number of people who come. And it's a wonderful thing to do. And you know, when we were talking about living in a small town somewhere where there may not be a lot of opportunities, you can make your own opportunities. You could put together a salon. You could start a monthly arts group where you get together at different people's houses and create art. There are so many different ways to build community, and I think that's kind of the cornerstone for me in terms of service, you know, toward this thing that I am so passionate about, and that's building community. And the salon has just been incredibly positive. And it's just a tremendous mix of people. I'm so delighted by it and so proud of it. I just can't even tell you.
Yeah, I agree. And it's sort of like, well, this, my whole next question is about fate and the way the universe plays a role in making things happen, because that's exactly how we met. But for years and years and years, I have been wanting to get involved in the local community, because I travel all over the country and sometimes out of the country, and almost everything I do and everyone I know is not in the DC area. So I thought someday I will, you know, make connections here. And then when the universe presented me with the connection of you being right down the road, it's like, hello, Leslie, can you get me closer? You know, so I just thought, okay, I have to act on this, because it's a gift to me to have a salon right down the road. So I want to thank you for the role you played in that, definitely. But let's talk about the universe and the role that the universe plays in making things happen. And I'm going to quote you that you wrote probably on one of your blogs, and you said, I am operating on my gut instinct, which has always been reliable. And the fact that all of the timing and options lined up perfectly as all of this began to happen, it is what I call flow. When a decision needs to be made, I look at whether the universe seems to be embracing it or whether there seems to be attraction against it. And I always follow the flow. So I want you to talk about that and talk about flow and trusting your gut when it comes to your art career.
Oh, absolutely. And And you and I think, both had this feeling when we met that, you know, sometimes you get that kind of goosebumpy feeling like this person is going to be important in what I'm doing. They're going to be important to my life. And it's always so wonderful when those things happen. And in my life, the older I get, the more I try to kind of release my predetermined sort of goals and my roadmap for getting to where I want to go and you know, having a stranglehold on the steering wheel the entire way. And I have learned, most especially in the last 10 years with some really amazing things that have happened in my life, that if you just kind of let go and you know, you might declare an intention and you might say, you know what, in the next 5 years, I want to do something, whatever that something might be, and you declare that intention, then I try to start watching. I try to start seeing what's lining up, you know, what circumstances are presenting themselves. When I made the move to this studio, I was in a very nurturing environment with some artists that I adored. We saw each other every day. I organized artist play dates at the Art Center, and we had a blast together. And when I started realizing that it was my time to move on, I was afraid. I mean, you know, you have something that's working, you have something that's a winning situation, and when you think of changing it, I think that scares anyone. And yeah. So this opportunity came up, and I kind of started watching what was happening, and all of the circumstances started lighting themselves up. The rent that I was able to pay was accepted by the owner of this building. You know, all of these little things that if you're not paying attention could just be considered happenstance, all kind of started lining up in the direction of this studio being a good idea. And this space, you know, it wasn't a bright white, pretty well-arranged studio and gallery before I moved in. It was kind of, you know, the blinds were all closed and it was dark and in need of a good scrubbing. And, you know, and I wasn't sure if I was making a good choice. I didn't know if I was going to be isolated over here. You know, there were so many questions. And it's probably one of the bigger decisions and choices that I've made in my career. And everything was lining up. Everything was starting to flow in this direction. And I said, well, if it's supposed to work out this way, it's going to. And I just kind of let go of the reins. And sure enough, everything lined up. Everything worked out. And, you know, there have been situations in my life where I want to have something happen, and I want it desperately. And I push and I tug and I struggle, and it will not work. And in the end, you know, in hindsight, you look back and say, oh, my gosh, thank goodness that didn't happen, because A, B, and C could not have happened, you know, in its wake, or I wouldn't be here, or I might, you know, still be there. And I think that as artists, I think that we are very intuitive thinkers, and I think we have a tendency to follow our gut possibly more than some other people do, because we, you know, that side of our brain is how we think, you know. And I think that staying tuned into intuition and the amazing little things that happen every day that some people don't pay any attention to, that kind of intuitive listening can really help you as an artist.
Definitely. It's like that book, Trust the Process. When you're creating your art, you just have to trust that it will come too.
Yeah.
And that's how I approach life. And even lately, I've been looking back on my life and like things I thought were false starts or mistakes or wrong directions. And I've actually seen how they all made what I'm doing now possible. It's like things, you know, when I learned how to program a computer back in the early 80s, back in the punch card days, you know, little did I know that that would serve me well to create my first website 12 years ago, which led to all the rest that's happened over the last decade. So even what I thought was, you know, wrong directions or false starts, it's all a piece of what I am here and now. So I love looking back and you know, putting the pieces of the puzzle together, too. So I'm crazy about the way the universe delivers. I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. And yeah, and in so many ways that we could never dream of, you know?
Right, right. I think you just take action on something and the universe says, okay, she's ready now. And then he, she, whatever, brings it from, you know, behind you or around the corner. It's not always what you're looking for or looking towards or moving towards, but it works in mysterious ways. So gotta love it. Okay. We gotta wrap this up. We got two more questions for you. There's like two questions I ask of every guest I have on the show. And the first one is, how do you define success as an artist?
Oh, and I imagine people listening, and I think that the first thing they see behind their eyes is dollar signs. Because that tends to be in our culture how we define success is just, you know, having monetary gain and having enough and being able to buy the things that we want. And I think as an artist, that is a very tiny part of what I define as success, because absolutely, you know, you want to be able to pay the bills, you want to be able to buy more supplies. And people buying your work in a way is them saying your work matters enough to me that I want to own it and have it in my house. So it's also an affirmation. But for me, I think success is being at this place where I am in my life where I have worked and worked and worked and I have painted murals out in the cold with my toes freezing and I have built my name, you know, one step at a time, and now I'm at a place where I can paint what I want to paint. If I want to go off on a tangent for 4 months or a year and a half, as the case might be, and work on something that matters to me, I have the freedom and the luxury to do that. And every single day I come to the studio, I'm inspired, I'm excited, I can't wait to start. There are days where I might do nothing but read books, or I might clean a closet, or I might cook lunch for everybody in my building, which I did last week. I made a wonderful stew on a day that our temperatures were going to hit, I think, 30 degrees, and that was what I did that day. And I think no matter what, having the luxury to do what it is that I want to do and to be working as a professional artist is the greatest success that I could have, because I'm so passionate about what I do and what I share, and I have the luxury to do that every day, and that's, I think it doesn't get any better than that.
No, it certainly doesn't sound like there's anything missing from your wonderful life, although you might beg to differ, but you have become quite a success just following your heart, I believe. So next question for you is, where does art come from?
Oh, from the tips of your toes and the depths of your soul and all the experiences that you've had and the events that have shaped your vision over the course of years. It's your childhood. It's your growing up. It's the things that hurt and the things that didn't. I think as artists, we all have a sensitivity and a kind of a depth of passion that probably makes us feel things more than other people in other walks of life might.
Yeah.
I'm trying to not make a massive generalization there. And so, you know, I think we feel our joy more, possibly, and I think we feel our pain more. And I think that's a part of an artistic sensibility. And I think that everything that happens along the way that we experience kind of forms and shapes and informs our work. So I think our art comes from who we are.
Okay. Beautiful answer. Thank you so much. So now it's your turn. Is there anything else you would like to share with us, workshops or exhibits or anything coming up that we haven't already talked about?
Well, you can always visit my website. It's very easy. It's judithhartsong.com. I have a large format group show at the Ratner Museum that is going to be in 2013, and I am working toward that. And I think actually the animal series is going to play a part in the work that I show there. And then there is also a book by Renee Phillips that will be coming out in the coming months, and it is about artists who transform, inspire, take initiative, and step outside the box. They turn in pain into purpose and create positive change in the world. And I am going to be one of the artists featured in that book. So kind of some neat things happening. And I keep putting one foot in front of the other and showing up every day and squirting the paint out onto my my microwave tray. I love microwave trays to put paint on. And I do the work.
Do the work. I love that. That's the perfect way to end off. So thank you, Judith.
Oh, Leslie, thank you so much for having me. And I'm so excited about, you know, where we're going to go and what we're going to do. And I'm really delighted to be a part of your radio show.
Well, I'm delighted to have you a part of my life and my art story. So thank you so much. And I look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks.
Sounds terrific. Thank you, Leslie.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us tonight. Please come back again on Monday, March 26, 2012, for my interview with New York City textile artist China Marks. Until then, this is Leslie Riley of Artist Success for Art and Soul Radio, reminding you that art is what you make it.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.